Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. David Bray, Chief Information Officer within the FCC. Also joining our conversation today from IBM is Dave Hathaway. David, earlier you mentioned your effort to bring 270 individual legacy systems down to basically none, in a sense. And when I was prepping for this interview, I noticed that somebody, whether it was you or somebody who was interviewing you, said it's akin to performing open heart surgery on the IT infrastructure. So with that as the backdrop, could you give us a sense of the vision you outlined to modernize the IT infrastructure? What were some of the goals and principles that shaped your efforts?
So when I arrived, there were 207 different systems on-premise, as mentioned, and they were average age 10 years old. And what was even more disturbing was those systems were consuming more than 85% of our budget just to maintain them. And that was growing each year because the systems were getting increasingly old, increasingly brittle, and you could not find the parts or the software to support them. And so what I really looked at when I came into the scenario after I listened, I spent about 3 months listening and learning and hearing as much as I could from the different bureaus and offices, is we would have to make a transformational leap. And that transformational leap was in 2 years or less, we wanted to basically have nothing on-premise anymore. And to get there, we had to do a three-phased approach. The first approach was stabilization, the idea that the patient's bleeding, the patient's not doing too well. We have to at least first stabilize the patient so that we can get the patient walking and eventually running. And that was just doing good IT hygiene, getting good sense of what we've got, just sort of getting good discipline aware and things that you would hope to be in place when I arrived that maybe weren't in place. Also with that is when we also began to get the outreach to the bureaus and offices that change is coming and also begin to show that we could do some quick wins. And so one was the consumer help desk where we were able to do it in less than 6 months. When they thought it was going to take 18 months and do it at 1/6 the price. We also rolled out Office 365 using their complete commercial solution. So it wasn't something that we were hosting on-premise, which gave us web-based email, web-based documents, and we actually did it in less than 2 months, which was a rather accelerated clip. But that was important because if we were going to get ready for the next step, which was rationalization, and we were actually going to move the servers off-site, we need to at least have the email in place before we actually pulled the plug. Now, along the way, I did try a couple things. One, I tried to see if the Department of Defense would actually host our servers. But they said they're .mil and we're .gov. They're not quite sure how that's going to work. So I was like, okay, we'll go commercial cloud. Also along the way, we tried to make the case that we could get additional funds so we could have double redundancy because we'd like to ideally replicate things. But the challenge is some of our equipment was so old that if we did replication, you're actually looking at spending between $30 to $40 million to replicate it. And then you're going to turn it off anyway once you get on the other side. So we really had to do the quote-unquote open heart surgery, which was we were going to literally power everything off at the FCC that could not be moved to the cloud right away. Now, we'd still have in place those things that already were in the cloud, but those things that weren't, pile them to 7 different trucks, 400 terabytes of data, and then send them off to a facility somewhere else outside of the DC area and then bring them back up. And that would actually require us to know everything we had. And so in some respects, the best thing about the rationalization part and doing the server lift is we actually got a complete inventory of everything we had accumulated over the last 20 years. The only time you understand what you have in your house that's 20 years old is when you move to another house. And along the way, we figured out that there had been some things over the, whether it was 10 years ago or 15 years ago, someone did a quick fix at the time with the plan of going back to make it more robust, and they never went back. And so there were a lot of different things that you just discovered because you had to get ready to move. So we then focused in on the third stage, which is now we're actually at and actually is the fun part. We got everything offsite. We now have nothing at the FCC. We've managed to reduce our maintenance spend from being 85% to now being less than 50%. And that gives us the fuel, given that the FCC's budget has not been increased. The last 6 years has been flat. So we were actually able to find the fuel for modernization simply out of the efficiencies we got out of doing the server lift. And that's now allowing us to now actually figure out for those systems that are so large you can't move them to the cloud directly, we can move the data to the cloud on the legacy system, still use the legacy interface. So it doesn't look like the user that anything has changed, even if the data is actually stored somewhere else, and then begin to do modular approaches where we'll take a component of that system, build it on a cloud platform that's already out there. And so you have them both running in parallel for a while. So for this part of the application, you go here. For this part, you still go to the legacy one. And eventually, we actually move the application in total to the cloud platform. It's almost like the way I put it is you take an MD-80 that's in flight, and while it's in flight, you want to go out and install some new engines, and before you know it, it's a 777. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're going to be doing next.
Yeah, so it does sound like fun. Actually, that is the fun part. So you mentioned moving things offsite and Operation Server Lift. So what were some of the successes, lessons learned, maybe even nail-biting moments about that?
Don't underestimate the need to build a strong coalition with your team. You can get all the technology right, but you know there will be something that will go surprise. There will be a hiccup. And what you really want is a strong coalition, both with your private sector partners that are helping you make it happen, as well as the government workforce. And you really want them to be intrinsically motivated. The next thing is plan, and then also expect that even though you've planned it to the nth degree, something will still go wrong. With the server lift, we did have a surprise where we got there and the cabling didn't match the topology that we had at the FCC. And so that took a little bit of time to get everything back up. But that actually was one of the, in some respects, best moments because you know, it could have easily devolved into finger pointing and blame and everything like that. But what happened was both our private sector partners and our government workforce rallied. We literally bought all the Red Bull probably in the county. And they worked for 48 hours straight with no sleep to get it right. And I think that was, you know, I didn't even have to ask that. They did that on their own intrinsically. And that's when you really feel humbled as a leader, when you have a team that is so invested to actually make that happen. And it's a multidisciplinary team, both the private sector and the government folks. They rallied and they got it done right. I often say I reward creative problem solvers. And I think looking back at it, that was actually a solidifying moment for the entire FCC team because now they're almost telling stories about, remember when you were there and we solved this issue, it actually rallied them into one single team.
So you mentioned before the common data platform being cloud-based. If you pick it up a level, like what are the benefits and challenges of moving IT systems to the cloud? And what do you think other federal agencies can learn from what the FCC is doing?
I think really what cloud gets you is, first and foremost, is agility. And that's something that's only recently become a requirement for organizations just because the world is changing so fast. We talked about how it's changing exponentially. If you're efficient but you're not fast, you're dead as an organization, whether you're a private sector or a public sector. And so we've had examples already where a bureau and office comes to us with a new requirement, and now that we've got things in the cloud and we have the common data platform, we can show a working prototype in less than 48 hours. And they're actually floored because they're like, well, wait, we weren't planning to meet with you until next week. And we're like, we're ready now. The second thing is the need for resiliency. There's going to be spikes in user demand. I mean, we had systems about 2 years ago when I was here at the FCC where with the proceedings that were happening that were very public and very visible, there was a spike on a 19-year-old system that was just not built for the era of today where there was, it was going from having a normal caseload of 2,000 to jumping to 4 million. Mm-hmm. And so the nice thing about cloud is you can do that, you can virtualize it, and you can spin up additional scenes. And so getting that resiliency, and by resiliency, I also would include to a degree security, recognizing that's a very challenging topic, cybersecurity. And that really, if you want anything perfectly secure on the internet, you probably want to unplug it from the internet and bury it underground and make sure no human touches it, as I want to disclaim as a CIO. But that said, you do want to actually have things in the cloud in some respects because there will be more monitoring and there'll be more of a vested interest in making sure they're secure because it's both your interest as well as your private sector partner. And then finally, you get the efficiency. And so we have had cases where it's generally about 1/5 or 1/6 the price to do it in the cloud. Mm-hmm. And that's for new development. For legacy, it's going to take a little bit longer because we have to extract the business processes. But compared to doing something on-premise versus doing it in the cloud, it's about 1/5 or 1/6 the price.
And so you mentioned legacy systems, and I know legacy modernization is also a very important topic. And you've likened upgrading legacy systems to that of an iceberg and trying to move an iceberg. What other challenges are you facing regarding legacy system modernization, and how are you approaching that?
I know I use the iceberg analogy, and I'm going to give you another one in just a second. The iceberg analogy is the idea that when you modernize, technology is the only stuff you see above the waterline. Mm-hmm. There's all the human processes. There's all the workforce, the fact that things are slow and they require a whole lot of people. That's the really hard part. And we usually don't collect those costs. Mm-hmm. You know, when you ask people how much a system costs, they give you the IT figure, mm-hmm. but they don't talk about what also takes 30 or 40 people to hand feed this information in and everything like that. The other thing that I would also toss out as an interesting analogy to consider too is when I mentioned where we're not going to have what used to be called enterprise architecture and engineering, and so we're going to be calling it cloud integration and catalog, is really thinking about the way we do IT modernization going forward is cloud integration and catalog will give you the definitions of the road. They'll give you the signage, they'll define the road and everything like that. tailored platforms and data, which used to be systems development, will give you the car. They'll give you the specifications of the car and everything like that. And then we literally let the mission stakeholder get in the car and drive it wherever they want on that road, as long as they don't drive it off the road, and as long as they don't change the car. But we also give them the equivalent of a gas card. The gas card is tied to their consumption. It's being paid out of their budget because, of course, as we know, most cloud services are consumption-based. So if they don't visibly see how much it's costing them, sure, they'll drive back and forth across the country 10 times and say, by the way, I'm out of gas card now. And so it's really about empowering the user to drive the car where they want to go, but also making sure there's some accountability too.
Well, you know, you mentioned the term empower, and you also mentioned the human element of doing all this transformation. And you sort of architected a really interesting approach to engaging the agency program areas. And where I'm going is you established a cadre of entrepreneurs. Could you tell us more about the effort? How are you empowering these folks exactly? And what prompted you to go in this direction?
So yes, so entrepreneurs are our chief change agents working with the different bureaus and offices. And by entrepreneurs, they're entrepreneurs on the inside. They're given autonomy. And it really is a recognition that we should be able to solve problems at the edge, and that they don't always have to come to the CIO. They don't always have to shout the loudest to me. And in fact, if they do that, I'm probably going to redirect them to the entrepreneur anyway, because the entrepreneur is going to know the context of what the bureau and office is doing. I often say if you've seen one bureau or office at the FCC, you've seen just one bureau and office. They're all very different and they have different needs. And so having someone co-located that understands your context, that actually has the authority and the ability to make decisions there, I think is key to being able to deal with scale.
And you mentioned earlier the little more informal happy hour that you have. And I think that kind of dovetails to the change agent. What does it mean from your perspective and in being involved in these little shindigs to be a change agent in the federal government? And what lessons have you learned from this experience?
Well, I always like to point out that the founders originally met in bars and that the revolution was planned in bars. So this is in keeping with that. Being a change agent, I mean, supposedly when the Constitution was signed, Ben Franklin said he could rest easy knowing that the great American experiment will exist for the next 50 years. And I think it's key, one, because that was 240 years ago, and two, that he used the word experiment. Because the reality is self-governance is an experiment, and we may need to make additional experiments to address the exponential era we're in. And so being a change agent, I think, is really just a reaction to the stereotype that somehow those people in government don't want to change. In fact, I think there's a lot of people that are hungry for change. They're just not given the autonomy to do so. And that's, in some respects, the challenge of public service that is unique relative to the private sector is, at least in the private sector, your CEO and your board of directors are all self-contained in the same company. In the public sector, on the other hand, at the federal level, you know, our board of directors are in the legislative branch, which are completely separate from the executive branch. And that's by design, and that we wanted to have checks and balances. And I celebrate wanting to have checks and balances. James Madison, when he wrote in Federalist Papers number 51, he said, you know, he wanted ambition to counter ambition. If all men or women were angels, no government would be necessary. And so I like having checks and balances. The challenge is when people complain government's too slow or it takes forever to get something done or you have to build consensus. Yes, but the trade-off is you could have a dictatorship and have no checks and balances. And so which of those do you want? And so I'm trying to submit a new approach, which is we can still have checks and balances, but if we empower the edge, at the edge we can have change at scale. And maybe that's the way we keep public service relevant and addressing. Because I do worry, having seen what I saw with the response to 9/11, with the response to anthrax, later Hurricane Katrina in Afghanistan, that if we don't come up with new organizational ways, not just technology ways, but organizational ways of being more agile and more resilient in our exponential era, that increasingly public service, and I do intentionally use the word public service, so it's both public, members of the public, government, and private sector professionals, public service will lose its relevancy. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what that means for the future of not just the United States, but the future of the world.
What is the FCC doing to foster a culture of risk-taking and experimentation? We will ask David Bray, its Chief Information Officer, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.